It's time for What's Up with Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.
Kia ora, Jacinda. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Hey, thanks for phoning in this morning. It's nice to hear from you. This is our first chat as well on the Breakfast Show.
It is our first chat.
and what a day for it as well. There's a lot happening out in politics at the moment.
Shall we
briefly touch on these budget hacks, which I want to actually talk about the budget properly. But So it's just come out a bit more this morning that there were over 2,000, the Treasury's website came under attack over 2,000 times in the last 48 hours. I know this is now a matter that's with the police as well.
Yes.
But what I'm kind of interested in is why is it so important that the budget stays a secret? If it's being revealed tomorrow, why is it so important that it sort of remains under wraps?
Yeah, and that's a good question. And so primarily all of the issues around attempts to access it and things, we're just leaving to the Treasury. They're the ones that, you know, keep and hold on to the information for us, the ones that know about the various attempts. And so that's for them. In terms of just budget secrecy and confidence, I'd say it's, you know, under the realm of just generally why it's really important that you have a public service that can be relied upon, because at any given stage, government's making decisions that can be commercially sensitive, that can have effect on markets, that, you know, are large spending decisions that might involve a procurement process. That's generally speaking. And you just need to have confidence that you can make those in confidence, make those decisions, and that they'll be released at a time that they're meant to be, because of all of those different, sometimes different moving parts that we deal with. And if you can't operate in that way, it really undermines the ability of the civil service to do their job as well. They have to be able to talk to one another confidently without worrying about things getting out. So it's really just about keeping that confidence, and there's lots of different reasons why, you know, you need to operate in that way.
Yeah, that, I can totally understand that.
We proactively release stuff. So when we make decisions as a cabinet, we then release the documents after those decisions are made. So we try and keep the transparency going, but just in a way in which we, you know, manage that properly. So we do know that there's a need to be more transparent. It's once the budget's done, actually a lot of the budget decision-making documents will go out after the budget, so people can then see the backstory to everything too.
Right. So I'm sure we'll hear more about this after Thursday as well, once this has been released officially and also investigated properly. But should we talk about the actual budget a little bit here?
Yeah,
so you outlined a bunch of priorities, about five major priorities for this budget, and you reiterated those last week as well. And one of them, one of your first priorities was to support mental health, especially for under 24s. And you've signalled that there's going to be a large financial spending put aside for this, which is awesome. But also the Mental Health Commission has asked for a 20% suicide reduction target by 2030.
Yeah.
And your government hasn't committed to a target. So without a target, how are we going to know that we're making progress, especially with youth suicide rates?
Yeah, and those numbers are released consistently, so people know how many suicides we have had in New Zealand. They know the age brackets for those, for that loss of life, and so that's all transparent. And we haven't officially announced our response to the Mental Health Inquiry, where they asked for a suicide target as well. However, we will be doing that at midday today. And while I'm not announcing the response to that particular question, I have always said that I've had a lot of discomfort with the idea of a suicide target. And, and I'll share with you why. Firstly, those countries who have had targets, some have dropped them. In other cases, it's not clear there's any evidence that it leads to a decrease in suicide. But ultimately, one of the things I've always talked about is I just don't feel comfortable with the idea of setting some kind of tolerance level. We would say that we'd succeeded if we'd only lost X number of lives, because every life matters. And so that's always been something I've really struggled with. But we've had the debate as a cabinet, and we'll I'll be putting out the official outcome of that a little later today.
All right. Well, that's thank you for that one. Another point that you have also made was that you really wanted to reduce child poverty and improve family well-being. And it's awesome that you guys have put aside all this money for reducing domestic and sexual violence. But the Child Poverty Action Group has expressed a little bit of concern that your government isn't being ambitious enough in reducing child poverty. Again, this kind of comes back to a question of targets as well. But what can we expect from this budget that might really make a difference for kids living in poverty?
Well, this will be the first time that a budget will have a child poverty report in it. And that's because we passed, you might remember the child poverty legislation we passed that now requires the government at every budget to report on child poverty numbers. We're also required to track our progress against targets that we've made to reduce child poverty. And so that first lot of reporting happens this time. What we did do, though, is make sure that instead of leading it to, for instance, Budget 2019, because it takes a while for the effects of, for instance, things like tax credits for families to be felt, we wanted to do that as soon as we got into office. So on the first 100 days, we cancelled the tax cuts, and you might remember we put in a big program called the Families Package, and it had in it the universal winter energy payment for everyone who was on a benefit. It had on it an increase in family tax credits, and those went to people on benefits as well. And it also had something called the Best Start payment, so that meant for the first year of a child's life, and for years 2 and 3, if you're on a low income, an additional bit of support because of those first 1,000 days. That's still rolling out. It takes 3 years to take full effect. So you'll see in the budget some of the impacts of that on poverty numbers, as well as the changes that we've made announced to abatement rates, and also the removal of the sanction around for parents who don't name the father of the child. So you'll see that we've put in the impact that all of those things are starting to have.
Right. So you're saying that this budget will sort of reinforce those things that you've already put into place. Right.
And those are the things that we've put out in the public domain for now, and people will see the reporting, and the rest they'll just have to wait for the budget.
So perhaps we'll talk now about a different topic, which has also been in the news heaps, which is of course abortion reform. That's been a hot topic for the last couple of weeks. And so the government, last year, Andrew Little asked for some recommendations on how we could move it out of the Crimes Act and into a health issue. Where are we at with that? There's been a lot talked about that. There's sort of three different models. In Model A, there'd be no legal tests to be satisfied. The decision would just be between the person seeking the abortion and the doctor. The second model would be a legal test before the abortion was performed, but it would be a test under health laws, not the Crimes Act. And the doctor would also have to reasonably believe that abortion was appropriate in the circumstances. And then also the third option is that there's no legal test before 22 weeks, and after 22 weeks there would be a test under health law that would be appropriate. I've got a couple of questions here. Firstly, what are your thoughts around these specific options, and also when can we expect an announcement of new legislation?
And so one of the things that I think really, it wasn't just so much that abortion is in the Crimes Act, but that as a result of it being in the Crimes Act, the threshold test meant that women had to demonstrate that if they didn't access an abortion, it would cause them, this is before the 20-week mark, that they, if they weren't able to, it would cause mental harm and or physical harm. And so that meant then before 20 weeks, then having to access two specialist appointments in order then to access an abortion in New Zealand. So that's the regime that we have now. And so by it being in the Crimes Act, there were then these flow-on effects for process, and that's one of the things I think that's came through from the Law Commission, was if you remove that, then the process itself changes, because you stop having those thresholds and you take a health approach. So with those three options, what we've had to do, of course, remembering that this is the tricky part of abortion law reform, is that it's not a party issue, and therefore it's not a government issue. Individuals vote on their conscience. So every single member of the Labor Party will vote individually. And the challenge has been that we've never, in the decades, updated abortion reform because of that. It's not a government issue. So what we've done instead is try to create a process where we put an option to Parliament, and we're still in the middle of just refining down what that option will be. So that work's being done, it's pretty close to being, you know, finished, then we'll be in a position to have something that can go before Parliament, and it will be then for individual members to decide. But we've used the Law Commission's work to do that.
So we can expect that quite soon then?
Yeah, so essentially the whole process, so for law change, you have to draft the law, then first reading, second reading, select committee. First reading, select committee, second reading, so it's quite an arduous process. Mm-hmm. It's not on hold, it is moving through, so people will see more publicly on it soon.
All right, well, that's good to hear. And then the last thing before we let you go this morning as well, that we haven't spoken to you since you've been in Paris for the Christchurch Call Summit. You've said that it was an important first step, this meeting with tech companies and governments from around the world, and you've called for verifiable and measurable outcomes. What would they look like to you? What actions would you like to see tech companies especially take now that would make that call mean something?
Well, they've already taken a few actions, particularly because the call did mention additional measures, particularly around live streaming, but there is more to do. So three quick areas. There's already something called the Global Intermonic Forum to counter terrorism. The moment that's very, and that's web companies belong, different tech companies belong to that, and it's quite focused on, for instance, ISIS-inspired extremism. That remit clearly needs to broaden out, so that's something I hope that we'll see as a result of this work. Civil society has called for more transparency around algorithms, and tech companies have undertaken to do more work on that. Also in the research space, some of the solutions we need don't exist yet, and so some money has been invested into researching tech-based solutions, so I'd like to see more done there. Tech companies are getting together again in June. We'll all reconvene in September, so it'll be a chance to check in on progress.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Jacinda, for giving
us
your time this morning, and we'll look forward to hearing from your budget tomorrow. Yeah, thank you so much.
Have a great day. Bye.
You too.
That was What's Up with Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern.